Hey, wonderfuls, happy new year. It is 2023, my friends, and we are looking right down the barrel of 298, episode 298 of the JV Club with Amy Nicholson. I agree, it did just sound like I was saying my own podcast name for the first time. Not really sure what that was about, but I know you are going to love this episode with the very fine Amy Nicholson. She is a film critic for the New York Times, Variety, among other places, but also key to know, she has a fabulous podcast called Unspooled with the one and only Paul Scheer, in which they talk movies. And there are many episodes waiting for you now to check out. You can get it anywhere you get podcasts. I also want to give a quick shout out to past JV Club guest and friend of the show, Gabrielle Ruiz. She released a fantastic Christmas single, Twinkle Twinkle. I encourage you to check that out. She's wonderful. And also just starred in Dance Dads, another charming feature premiered at the Austin Film Festival. So wanted to give her a shout out and tell you guys to check those things out. By the time you hear this, I will be getting so, so very close to being up in San Francisco for SF Sketchfest. I certainly hope to see some of you there in person. If you're at a show and you see me running around like crazy in producer mode, don't hesitate to give me a shout out and wave. And if I can give you a quick COVID free hug, I certainly will. There's so many amazing shows to check out at the festival. Visit sfsketchfest.com for more info. I'm going to be doing a bunch of shows there. I'm embarrassed to say I'm doing so many shows that you might as well just go to sfsketchfest.com. And when you click on tickets and schedule, you can actually search by name and you can look to see the different stuff that I'm on. Doing Braving the Elements and Hey Riddle Riddle the very first weekend of Sketchfest. Got some Spont Tour Co. and some theme park happening later on in the festival. Cannot wait to celebrate our 20th year of the festival in person. It's going to be a blast. So hope to see some of you. In the meantime, enjoy this episode with Amy. And again, Happy New Year. Let me tell you something. I just finally watched the Ronnie Spector documentary, or documentary series, I guess. I don't know if it's a Showtime or... but it is another situation where you're like, now I hear... I mean, I can appreciate the beautiful work that the musicians did on it, but like so many other things, now whenever I hear any song that sounds like it might be Ronnie Spector, I'm like, let me just think about this guy for a second.
Oh, no. He's love not her great. So much. And
I mean, I mean Ronnie Spector, but wait, don't I mean, what's his name?
Oh, yeah.
Phil Spector.
Phil Spector. I know.
Sorry, Ronnie.
Well, but that's exactly the thing. It's like you can't hear her songs without hearing him.
Oh,
but
God. Her songs and then are the all these other musicians, too. And like, blech. Anyway.
I know.
What a weirdo. What an absolute weirdo. It's almost like when people have too much unchecked power in any realm or industry that they're in, there's a real danger there. It's almost like that.
What? It always works out great, she says in a tweet.
Okay, so I know that we are not a visual podcast, but you do have a beautiful background. We were speaking of it earlier. Will you please tell people what your hometown is and what I specifically am looking at?
Yeah, my hometown is San Antonio, Texas, mm-hmm. the seventh biggest city in America, a fact that surprises mm-hmm. people every single time that I say uh-huh. it. But I love to rep it, love to rep San Antonio. And so I put up as my background our Riverwalk, probably the most famous mm-hmm. No, second famous. Oh my gosh, I was about to get shot and killed by all the Texas people. The Alamo is our most famous thing. But then we have this beautiful river leading up to it with a bunch of margarita restaurants where you can get very expensive enchiladas.
And if I told you that I was going to be in San Antonio next week for Christmas, because that is where my sweetie's family is from, so I've been there many times, would that come as a surprise to you?
It would, because I just always feel like every time I say San Antonio, people blink and they're like, how close is it to Austin? Looking for a yeah. frame of reference.
Which, by the way, not that far. So got not some of the far. Spillover vibes of Austin, which is very nice.
But keep all the lame people out of San Antonio. Oh, wait, no, agreed. I should actually reverse that because, you know, Austin used to have that bumper sticker, keep Austin weird. And we had two that we made in opposition because there's a real tension, I would say, between our cities, or a little bit of yeah. huffiness. Uh-huh. And they were Keep San Antonio Metal, which I appreciate, And love also it. Keep San Antonio lame, which I appreciate on even a deeper level.
Absolutely. You know what I did that for the first time? He and I have been together for almost 8 years, but I had never been there at the same time as, I mean, is it just called Fiesta? I'm so sorry. I'm from Tucson, so all we do is celebrate Mexican holidays, but that is not one that has ever touched Tucson. Is it just called Fiesta or am I?
Yeah, it's just straight up called Fiesta and it's huge. It's, and you were there?
Charming. I was there. Yeah, I went to the a market and street fair and like galleries and, you know, went to one of the Fiesta stores there that just has like miles and miles of beautiful Mexican dresses, of which I already own too many, the little embroidered, hand embroidered dresses. And it felt, I was like, oh, and which is one of the reasons I love San Antonio is that it's very different from Tucson in many, many ways. But the celebration of Mexican culture is extremely familiar to me and feels like home. So I just love that aspect of it.
Yeah, it almost feels like kind of a culture that if you're from one of those cities like Tucson or from San Antonio, when you go to lots of random cities, they also feel kind of especially magically at home. Like I feel that way in Santa Fe. I feel that way in Los Angeles.
Absolutely.
Where it's I feel comfortable here. I feel rooted here.
Absolutely. How long did you live there before you moved away and where did you move to?
Yeah, I was there from 5 to 18. Before I moved there, I was born in Michigan. And when we moved to Texas when I was 5, my parents gave me a book like explaining what Mexican food was to get me ready to move to Texas because I was a little kid.
Is it like a little picture book? Like, tamale, next page.
Exactly, yeah. Because, you know, in Michigan, you just have hard shell taco night with ground beef. Right. So they're like, no.
Now you're going to have the sour cream.
Exactly. They really were like, eat everything when you arrive. You must be an adventurous eater in San Antonio. And yeah, I was there till I was 18. And then I went to Oklahoma for college, which I also like to rep because it's Oklahoma. You know, we have lovely things in Oklahoma as well.
In Oklahoma City or elsewhere?
Norman. It's the college town that's right underneath Oklahoma City. It's like half an hour away.
Yeah,
a lot of cool people are from there. Elizabeth Warren was born there, which I didn't know until she was running for president.
Yeah, for sure. Weirdly, Brandon from San Antonio's best friend is from Oklahoma City and lives there with his marvelous professor wife, who doesn't teach at Norman, but who was teaching up in a college in Canada. And then I think now is doing some sort of like online stuff. But so I also have like a lot of affection towards Oklahoma for not being there or ever having lived there.
I have a feeling we could do like a detour mini episode of this podcast that would just be like figuring out how I know your boyfriend and through who. And I'm so tempted, but I will spare everyone that.
He's also a journalist, so we'll get there. We might get there. Yeah, offline, we might get there. And so was your high school in San Antonio like a big public school, or were you tucked in somewhere a little more quiet?
Yeah, I did the public school thing up until eighth grade. And then when I was a freshman, my parents forced me, really against my will, to go to an all-girls Catholic school in San Antonio, Incarnate Word. There's a couple all-girls Catholic ones, and that's sort of the one with the we had the most plaid skirts. We have the older history. Uh-huh. We have the most nuns, probably. We had a lot of Irish Catholic nuns. And so
Nuns, probably, is very satisfying to me. Like, I know, don't hold me to that. Do not hold me to that. But I do suspect we did have the most nuns.
Right now I'm like, oh man, some girl from Providence is going to be like, you don't even know how many nuns we had. We had so many nuns.
Incarnate Word is, for a non-Catholic, sounds a little bit intimidating, possibly threatening.
Yeah, I am a non-Catholic, and I was when I went there too. And I was like, what? Why? Uh-huh. But we had to take religion classes and do the whole thing. We watched the movie Ghost in religion class for some reason so that we could take it. Yeah, we had this nun who made us take a whole class in the things our bodies do after we die, which is, you know, learning multiple choice answers to a whole lot of nonsense. Oh, yeah, we're going to teleport. It'll be so sweet.
I gotta take this in for a second. Hang on. Number one, isn't there like witchy voodoo in there? Now, I will suggest, and perhaps you've come to this conclusion already, with or without your friend Paul Scheer, was she just a fan of Whoopi Goldberg because of Sister Act and was like, let me like retcon Ghost to incorporate my favorite nun, Whoopi Goldberg, into also being a fake psychic?
You know, I never put that Sister Act connection together, and now my entire life is clicking back into sense, because that has always been a memory from school where I was like, we did that? What? People are like, you recommend a Catholic school education? I don't know, honestly.
I saw a ghost. That's fascinating. Okay, so if you could, elaborate a little bit more on how ghost is a good teaching tool for what happens to your body after you die.
Yeah, I kind of think it was really just a sales pitch that if you stay Catholic, cool things will happen to you. Maybe when you're dead, you kind of how the Catholic Church has always operated. You know, like, give us your money now. Suffer, suffer, suffer. Go fight in this war. But when you're dead, it's going to be so sweet, bro. You're going to love it. Be running around on these clouds.
In Ghost, doesn't he get trapped in, like, the world? And, like, because he was murdered horribly and he has, like, unfinished business and he needs to, like, get the murderer caught? How is that? How is that a Catholic promise?
But doesn't he also still kind of get to bone?
I mean, do they do pottery together after he's a ghost? No, that's before he's a ghost, I think.
I think it's, he's in Whoopi.
Right?
He's
definitely in Whoopi.
He's definitely in Whoopi.
I don't feel like Whoopi ever gets near the potting wheel. Right? So I think maybe it's the famous throwing a pot scene between the two of them where their hands get all covered in clay, which maybe somehow has something to do with something biblical. Like, I feel like clay shows up in the Bible once or twice. I'm not sure. I didn't go to Catholic school. But
yeah, wait. Are we made of clay?
Are we made of
golems?
Clay?
Was that the thing?
Yeah,
Der Golem. We're like expressionist. God's like, oh no, I made monsters. I'll just leave that one there.
Let me make something else. Could write a thesis on that with or without ghosts involved. Okay, this is fascinating. It's almost, and I'm going to suggest this to you. Think about it. I don't know if you listen to Jonathan Goldstein's wonderful Heavyweight podcast, but in Heavyweight, he has people come to him with sort of mysteries from their lives and things they've been carrying around with them that they feel conflicted about in some way. And he tries to sort of get to the bottom of it. And a lot of the time there's resolution among family members. It's a beautiful, very funny podcast. But I think if you reached out to him and said, my nun taught us the movie Ghost in school in a private Catholic girls' school, and I don't understand why, he would try to track her down or someone else who remembered that curriculum. And like, that would be a magical episode of that podcast of you guys exploring how the incarnate word, it was possible to utilize ghost in a Catholic setting.
That sounds wonderful. I wonder if we could make it maybe a two-parter, because I'd also like to ask him about my fourth grade teacher who had us all make a construction paper replica to scale of Picasso's Guernica.
Oh my God.
And that one, the one that has never left me.
Oh,
I'm like, I did the screaming dying horse on fire. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Honestly,
Fourth grade.
Yeah, that Mrs. Erlinger. Honestly.
And that's public school, if memory serves.
It is public school. Greatest teacher I've ever had in my life. Like, I just want to know everything about her telling administration she was going to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I guess you have to. I guess you're not doing that under the radar necessarily, especially if it's like a physical manifestation with materials that other people will see.
Oh, yeah. And it was big. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the actual Guernica in Madrid.
So it was
Madrid.
Literally like, so the proportionality was exactly the same and correct.
Yeah. She wanted to teach us about gridding, but she really picked that one.
Gridding! I love everything I'm hearing right now. Okay. Both of those things. Strongly encourage Jonathan Goldstein to get involved. What was your friend circle like? If you had one, maybe you were one of the people like me who sort of had this and this and that and over there and these people didn't know each other and all that. Or did you have kind of your group of people in high school that you hung with?
Well, we were so small that you had kind of your group, but you really knew everybody anyway. We had like 117 girls in our class.
Okay.
And then my group of friends all dated from the same clique of boys, and that school was only like 25 people in our class. So it was very, very inbred and incestuous. My group was sort of a floater eclectic group. Like two of the people in it had been like best friends since they were in elementary school. You know, they went up through Catholic school together and then I kind of barged in as a freshman. And they were the people who like did talented things. They were both in the choir. They were both very good singers. They both played basketball. I didn't do any of that, but I was their friend. So I just hung out all the time. I became like the basketball scoreboard keeper, you know, to be like, oh, we're hanging out. We're doing
things.
That's
pretty charming. Yeah.
And then we went to theme parks all the time. So we were just, we had season passes to Fiesta Texas.
Okay.
Which is, you know, our big theme park. And so when that opened and it was still pretty like empty-ish, we were just there all the time. We just got dropped off and dated every boy who worked there. We dated the guys who like swept the trash. We dated the guys who gave us sodas when my friend showed them her boobs. You know, it was really classy, really classy stuff.
How is Fiesta Texas like a Six Flags-y kind of a thing? What is the vibe of that amusement park?
Yeah, I believe when I was in high school, it wasn't yet owned by Six Flags, and now it is. But its whole vibe is that, you know, Texas lived under Six Flags. That's where the name came from. You know, France, Mexico, America. I wish I could say I already knew this, but this is totally blowing
my mind right now.
Yeah, I don't know how much they talk about the Confederate flag being one of the six, but it is. And then our own flag, that's five flags, maybe Spain. I feel embarrassed that I'm missing it. Yeah.
But wait, okay, so Six Flags originated in Texas, is what you're telling me right now. And it owns the Six Flags moniker because Texas was known to fly Six Flags or to, you know. I did not know this. I don't know any of this.
Oh, yeah. Fun fact about Texas, at least according to everything I was told as a child in school over and over again, is we are the only state that's allowed to fly its state flag as high as the American flag because we were our own country.
Oh, so classic
Texas. We have a lot of flag brag.
Classic Texas. Yeah, we're going to fly it at the same height. Yeah, we are. Might even secede. You don't know.
Like, oh, right now I'm like, oh, no, please don't secede. Go ahead. I think my Fiesta Texas wasn't Six Flags when it opened. And so it was a theme park that was all about just the history of Texas. You know, there was like the kind of Mexican village. There was the cowboy village. And then there was like the 1950s seaside village. And I don't really know how that all fit in. And so you kind of went between the three and experienced what Texas is like.
Okay. I mean, it's still out there. It's still out there being, maybe I should go, having no interest in riding roller coasters any longer for a multitude of reasons that involve my body and brain being broken. But I mean, it's still kind of fun to wander around spots like that.
It is. And I've really been wanting to go back because, you know, my editor at the New York Times, he is a roller coaster expert. And like he centers all his vacations around going to places with new roller coasters. And I love hearing about it. So I was like, what's the latest in roller coaster technology? What's going on? And he says that San Antonio has the fastest ride without wheel bearings or something. It's something really technical, but we have a new ride that's supposed to go faster than any ride is supposed to go. And he's like very hyped on it. And now I'm like, I didn't know we were leading the charge in a technology of roller coasters.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I like the idea of maybe one of those, like, I remember at Knott's Berry Farm when I was a kid, my dad would drive us out to, like, do a Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland co-trip in February, which, as my listeners know, we have, and I guess maybe still have, rodeo weekend, where no one else anywhere has that weekend in February off, like a Friday, maybe a Monday, but even if it's just a Friday. And so it's a great time to go to an amusement park because it's, you know, it's like dead season, but you have the long weekend because you are not going to the rodeo. But I remember they had those like parachute, like they shoot you up in a tiny cage and then a parachute sort of opens and drops you down. I don't know if that's like still there. But I do like the idea of a theme where two parachutes go up and like there's one represents the American flag and the other represents the Texas flag and maybe some other flags that don't get to go as high. And then maybe the Texas flag just goes like 2 inches higher than the American flag parachute. And then it's like a little bit of a fuck you.
That sounds about right. Like I would have to say when I left Texas, The strangest thing for me to adjust to was that every other billboard in every other state doesn't always keep yelling about itself. You know, like everything in Texas is like from Texas toast to like Texas donuts, Texas bread, Texas proud, Texas this.
Yeah. And maybe
I think California is maybe just too long to put on signs, but like nobody else seems to be as insecure about declaring where you are as Texas.
I love it. I mean, I definitely have, like, you know, all the feelings that you can have about a state where people, I mean, there's so many people I love in my life who came from Austin or Houston or Dallas or San Antonio. I mean, and then you've got your, like, weirdo kind of, like, Waco is now kind of a great, cool place for film. And, you know, Marva's awesome. And
El Paso is really dope.
I've never been to El Paso.
Oh, it's
yeah,
so great.
Yeah, I've never been to El Paso. I would very much like to do that. And so it's cool because, like, when I first went there, because I was dating someone in, like, when I was 19 or 20 who was from Texas and who moved back to Texas, to Denton, which is outside of Dallas and near, like, a great music school, for those of you who don't know. But that first trip, I definitely was like, I don't know. Like, I don't hear great things about Texas. Like, I don't know about this. The evolution of my feelings about it from that first visit to sort of how I feel now is, like, I feel like I have more of a native's relationship to it, which is this sort of exasperated family member, like, God, you're so great sometimes. Come on. Be great all the time. Come on. You know?
No, I totally agree, because when you have spent time in Texas and you realize how the rest of the country talks about Texas, you're like, that's not exactly it. You know?
Yeah.
That, like,
yeah.
I think sometimes I hear that there's just sort of like a people imagine a backwards mentality about Texas.
Right.
That when I'm there is more just like a stubbornly teenage, you don't tell me what to do mentality. It's not
totally.
Like old grumpy man. It's like, no, no, no,
right.
no, no. You know, like everybody yeah. there is just very willful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
the places that it gets scary are like the, not, I wish I could say super small towns, but even just like smaller communities outside of big cities, and in some cases big cities, that where you have the sort of like, and I'm not going to take us on this bummer ride, but like the kind of endemic long-term like law enforcement problems where it's like the sheriff could do, and this is true anywhere, but you know, it's like the people aren't necessarily concerned about getting the right person in certain communities in Texas that I've seen firsthand, where you're like, I mean, it's a little, that part is a little the Wild West. Like, that part does feel a little bit like everyone in the system is like, I don't know, he was black. It seemed like a good idea to put him in prison.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of one of those places where when I was a kid growing up there, I was like, this has to be the best place in America to grow up. It's super diverse. You know, it's a majority Mexican town. Like, a lot of my friends are bilingual, you know.
Totally.
I was usually like one of the only blonde people like in a room. You know,
same.
Yeah.
All of everything you're saying. Same, 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 same.
Same, same, same. And so I loved that because it didn't feel like growing up in, you know, like how I imagined, you know, life back home in Michigan was or something like that.
Which, but, by the way, I think you're right about, right? I mean, you're not wrong.
I would hope
based on people I talk to.
But then when I left, I realized how many other cultures I wasn't exposed to in Texas.
Yes.
Like, I had no Jewish friends. I didn't know anybody Jewish when I grew up in Texas.
Can't
and
help
so,
you there. Everyone in Tucson who's white is Jewish.
Oh,
not
really?
Everyone, but a lot of people. Yeah, there's a big Jewish population in Tucson. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm always asking my boyfriend for information on the Jewish holidays because, you know, his mother is Jewish and he's sort of not practicing but grew up with some of the traditions. So I was like, what's this? When do you do this? Like, yesterday I bought a box of Hanukkah cookies to like ice and frost because I'm very excited. We're like going to his family for Hanukkah.
Yeah. Huh.
And but yeah, I always feel very ignorant about that because of Texas. And it was very, yeah. I don't know. I want to say it was like people talk to each other more than they do in LA. Mm-hmm. But then there were just kind of weird things that would happen. Like my best friend, one of them like lived on, you know, the quote unquote bad side of town because uh-huh. her parents ran a community center. Her parents uh-huh. are like wonderful, like liberal hippie folk
yeah.
singers. Who love. Run a fantastic outreach center. You know, they're always like gathering gifts, giving them to the local community. You know,
yeah.
really great outreach. But when we would go to her house and like drive around at night, you know, to go get donuts or something like that, we would get pulled over by the cops because they didn't understand what two white girls were doing in that part of town. And they
right.
thought we were lost or they thought we were getting drugs. It was always one of the two things. And we yep. were getting donuts. And it was like,
uh-huh.
and she lived there.
Which is so a type of drug, but a safer one.
Yeah, so those things kind of stack up when you get older. You're like, oh, right, that happened.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hey, that's Ben.
And that's Adam.
And together we host a show called Greatest Trek. on Maximum Fun that covers all of the new Star Trek shows, Lower Decks, Strange New Worlds, Picard, Prodigy, Discovery, and any other Star Trek show Paramount throws at us.
Come check it out for our funny and informative recaps of all the new stuff the Star Trek Industrial Complex churns out. It's in your podcatcher every Tuesday.
Subscribe to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation.
Well, when you weren't scorekeeping for a team, did you have above and beyond your friendships with those two young ladies and your friendship circle? Like, did you have your stuff too? Like, were you interested in theater or creative writing? Were you on the newspaper staff? Obviously, I'm leaning into things that relate to things I know about you now in terms of being, you know, on a podcast talking about films and being a writer. But
yeah,
you're allowed to have been interested in none
you
of them or
me.
All of them.
Oh my God, are you my therapist?
Am I Whoopi Goldberg? A ghost?
Yeah, all of those things. I did theater behind the scenes. I was a stage manager. I never liked being on stage. So I was like, you know, getting the props together, helping organize everything, doing the photography for like our advertisements. Photography was my thing really in high school.
Nice.
My school had a dark room. And we had a weird schedule where you didn't have class a lot of the time. So it was, I don't know, very complicated. It was like a modular schedule where each class was like 2 17-minute periods and there were 17 mods. Anyway, you might have a day where you only have one class, but you're still on campus and you're supposed to like go to classrooms and do your homework. But I spent it all in the dark room. So I was just always in the dark room, destroying my nails, you know, never using tongs and doing photography all the time, which was really like a seeding for how I got into film. Was just thinking about images. But yeah, that was my thing. We had a dark room in my house. My parents like put one in the garage and then they would find like topless pictures of my boyfriend in there and absolutely lose their mind.
Topless? I don't know. It's not often enough that we get to hear men without their shirts on being described as topless.
I know. You're about to hear it twice because the reason I tried to start our school's paper and I quit our school's paper because they wouldn't let me run a topless picture of a different guy on our school on the cover of the paper of our first issue. Because school bought a boys' school. And I thought that was really funny that like the boys we knew were going to start going to our classes.
Like
sometimes.
They acquired it, basically?
Yeah. So sometimes like the guys we knew were allowed to come to our class, but not very much.
And was it on the same campus or was it like how did that work?
It was about a 10-minute drive away, a little bit less.
Were those the guys that everyone was dating?
For my group, yeah. So we were very excited about it. And so one of the guys, I like photographed him topless, wearing one of our uniform skirts. And it was like a majestic pose, you know, like hands on his elbow.
I'm hearing.
And I was like, this is going to be our cover story. We just bought this, our boys' school. We have to make a big deal out of this. And they were like, absolutely not, no nipples. And I got very upset and I wound up quitting the paper before we ever had an issue. So... taking moral stances for no reason was me in high school.
I love that. Does that translate to, because the only thing that I flashed to when you said that was, I don't even know if I've told this story on the podcast before, but in 500 episodes, you'd think that it would have come up if I talked to people about their high school experiences. But I loved my sophomore English teacher, and he was someone I'd known my whole life because my dad was an English teacher, and I was like really excited to have him as a teacher. And it is to this day, between my dad's class and Mr. Mackey's class, my favorite English classes I've ever taken, which I guess I did peak in high school from an English class kind of perspective. I don't have those feelings about the English I took in college. But he got us deeply into poetry. He was like, he leaned strongly on poetry. That's where I like first fell in love with Dylan Thomas outside of A Child's Christmas in Wales, which I had always grown up with because my dad loved A Child's Christmas in Wales. But I got into a huge argument with my teacher about like the meaning of one of the poems or something, some obscure Dylan Thomas poem that no one else had even bothered reading. And I like stormed out with my face bright red of the classroom. I'm sure there's other stuff going on. Like there may have been some hormonal stuff happening, but like, I was so furious, and that's exactly what I thought of. I was like, wow, way to take a stand on like a mild school issue. But I love that you're like, no, thank you. Not on my watch. I mean, did you do that with other things?
Yeah. Okay. When I was getting ready to say hello to you, and I know this is an audible form, but I'm showing you this. I found my memory book of high school. So I was going through it.
Wonderful.
Like, what should I talk about?
Wonderful.
And I found in here my most favorite thing that I'm so glad I saved, which is a demerit I got for being sassy.
Please tell me it says the word sassy on there.
Oh, it does. You know, it had options, tardy to school, you know, from violation, out of area, eating or drinking, chewing gum, disturbing learning process, disrespect of living school property. Then this teacher checked other and wrote in her cursive, being sassy.
It's hard for me not to imagine the teacher having a little bit of a sense of humor about it, but possibly also no sense of humor about it at all.
I was a jerk in the way that you were describing too. There's something that I miss about being a high schooler in that I had such confidence in my opinions and like that is right and that is wrong and I was going to tell people. And now I'm like, oh, the world's so complicated and gray and I want to have empathy. But I miss a little bit of that just like steel spine, irritable teenager who was sassy. Right.
But did you feel too like, because that's something that I'm so fascinated by and I never get tired of with like talking about teenagehood is this sort of amazing yin and yang of being like my most confident and my least confident. Like, do you relate to that? Like, how could I have been so bullheaded about that, but been like so crushed if someone didn't like me or so nervous about what, you know, a choice I made in wardrobe one day, but then the next day be like, and I am wearing a house coat and I'm fabulous. Like, I don't feel like I was across the board consistent about the sassiness. Do you agree with that?
1,000%. 1,000%. I feel like I was riddled with every single insecurity under the sun. And yet, when I was pushed against the wall, I'd be like, absolutely not. No way.
And when you say that photography is what you got interested, what sort of took you into maybe looking at film more critically or in a, you know, with more detail and sort of appreciating it more, is that when you did kind of fall in love with film and become fascinated by it? And what form did that take other than like your relationship to imagery and photography?
Yeah, very much. Like, the first thing that ever really hooked me is there was this magazine called Zillions when I was a little kid. And Zillions was like Consumer Reports for kids, right? And so would tell kids.
This is the first time I think I've heard of it.
Oh, it's so amazing. There's a couple issues online on like archive.org if you ever want to like check through it.
Yeah.
But it would explain, you know, here's how a commercial works. Like here's that the milk in your cereal bowl advertisement is actually glue. And it would walk you through how you were being manipulated by commercials.
Wow.
And it was amazing.
Is cool.
It should exist again. It was the greatest magazine for kids. And it really radically activated me. So I got super interested in advertising and imagery. And then that got me interested in photography because it all kind of felt like the same. Like how does an image manipulate people? Like what are we doing with images to control how people are feeling? And then film just came right out of that. You know, I went to college knowing I loved that. And then
that's so cool. I do need to look up Zillions because the idea that you would be like speaking truth to power so young and to have a magazine that's like, no, like we're not gonna, you know, it's just very sophisticated and very cool. And when you were describing it, I was like, I feel like truly the first time like anyone sort of gave me a version of critical thinking like that about advertising or consumerism or whatever was like women's studies class in like sophomore year of college. Like it took me that long for someone to be like, you know, when you see a woman in an advertisement, you know what I mean? Like that's what it brings up for me. And yet it was a child's magazine. So I'm very impressed.
But those moments of activism or like activation, I guess I should say, aren't they just the most treasured ones?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
My dad was a lawyer and my mom was an educational psychologist who studied how children think. So the combined force of them, I think, was why they seeded stuff like that in me as a child. They were hyper aware of learning and they wanted to raise a very argumentative, independent child. I was an only child, to make it even worse.
Me too.
And then in high school, they're like, what have we done? She's a monster. Uh-huh. No. And now as an adult, I'm like, my boyfriend and I are in couples therapy to talk about my pathological need to be independent at all times.
Yep. Everything you're saying is very familiar to me. I very appreciate it. Okay, so what are you discovering in film that is really speaking to you? Are there genres that you're falling in love with in your teens and late teens? What are your favorite like movies and what are you drawn to? And are you going to movies and seeing them over and over in the movie theater and stuff?
I'm coming to it in kind of a roundabout way because my family wasn't, I would say, like an artistic family. We didn't spend a lot of time like watching movies, and I wasn't a kid who, you know, was renting the works of Robert Bresson in high school. Like some of the critics I know who are like, oh, yeah, I was always at the library. Or, like I lived at the movies. You know, I didn't. Yeah. I wasn't that kid. Like I kind of lived doing lots of other things and came to movies sort of more with a seriousness, maybe junior, senior year. And in that time, I was just really into retro stuff. So I was always watching TCM, and there was a movie called The Best of Everything. Mm-hmm. And it was this movie about like three women working in an office building in the late 50s, I believe. Joan Crawford is in it as one of the bosses. And, you know, it's like their loves of their life that cheat on them and the people who get passed over for promotions and one of the girls dies. And that kind of soap opera 50s movie where everybody's in pastels, hugely influential. Like I did my senior year class portrait trying on my own badly to imitate the makeup from that movie, being like lavender eyeshadow and like black eyeliner. And it meant everything to me. Like I loved that. And then from there, really like the best film access I had at that time, because I'm just old enough that I didn't have internet really in high school.
Yeah.
It was like very slow uploads and you didn't bother.
Right.
I remember like uploading a picture of the Smashing Pumpkins and it just took like an hour. And I was like, well, forget this. But like Vogue magazine was always writing about interesting things and interesting movies. And that was really like my portal into movies that we didn't get necessarily in Texas or that I didn't know how to find unless I had made my parents drive me across town. And they like made me so curious and things. And they wrote about how Pink Flamingos, the John Waters movie, was coming back into theaters.
Yeah.
And so that, I was like, we're going. And all of my friends, I dragged us to see that movie. And they were absolutely like horrified and angry at the part where like Divine eats dog poop. And they were like, you never get to pick a movie ever, ever again. But that was really my vibe. It was like classic stuff, retro, weird, very much into Pink Flamingos. And I listened to the soundtrack all the time. When I was 15, a guy was picking me up for a date, like our first date. And all I wanted to do was see Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, because Vogue had written about that too.
Sure.
And so he came to my house and he was like, my dad for some reason like flipped out about it. He was like, you can't go see an R-rated movie. And I was like, but it's wonderful. And he was like, you absolutely can't.
Yeah.
And our church deacon was over at that time.
Who
was
and like, is this, so you, were you Catholic, like went to church Catholic? Or this
Greek
is Catholic
Orthodox.
School?
Yeah.
Greek Orthodox. Okay, got it. Got
yeah,
it, got
my
it.
Mom is Catholic, but my dad is Greek Orthodox. And so this is like our Greek Orthodox deacon.
Gotcha.
And he really stuck up for me. And he was like, she should get to go see Pink Flamingos. I've heard it's wonderful. And so he convinced my dad to let me go see this R-rated movie when I was 15. And then it became my favorite thing of all time. Or not Pink Flamingos, sorry. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And
Priscilla,
then when I got a car, I named it Priscilla. And that was my movie. That like all capitals.
There's I don't want to like limit the scope, but it's hard not to hear Priscilla and John Waters and think camp, right? It's hard not to sort of think camp. And even Joan Crawford stuff where everything is sort of larger than life and fabulous in a way and heartbreaking in a way. So is that fair to say that like that you were attracted to that?
Yeah,
like,
very
not,
much.
Not principally, but like that, yeah, that was something that, because like for me, I definitely, my version of that was definitely like Hal Ashby and Robert Altman. Like that was, you know, I, for whatever reason, seeing, you know, like I got really into, in high school, I was really into like, what weird shit were people doing in movies that, you know what I mean? Like what, so that era of like 60s and 70s movies, I was sort of like guzzling up and didn't really like know about like more camp stuff. And so I'm always interested in like the things that, you know, suddenly we're like, this is me. This says something to me or about me, or, you know, because I can't look back and go like, well, obviously Robert Altman's, you know, penchant for having conversations going on just off screen that you're supposed to be paying attention to. Like, I don't know. You know, I don't know why that seemed important, you know?
Wait, that sounds so sophisticated. Now I'm like, oh, man, I wish I had grown up as sophisticated as that.
I don't know if that's, I mean, I wish I could say that was you know, I mean, a lot of it, I feel like can be traced to Harold and Maude, and then just wanting to expand out from the feelings that that movie gave me. And like, you find your little 6 degrees of separation of threads, like, well, I love this actress in this, and oh, she worked a lot with this director, and then this director has these weird movies that feel very adult. And like, you know, for the same reason, like being in college and reading Margaret Atwood novels, where you're like, I do understand the dissolution of a cold marriage. And you're like, I'm 18. Like, I've never been with someone for longer than like 5 months. Like, why do I think I understand this? But so I don't know that it's like mature as much as it is, you know, playing house or whatever you want to think of it as, like, you know, do I understand this? Or is there just something more latent that's like trying something on, you know?
Well, I'm still going to think of you as the most impossibly sophisticated teenager. So that's engraved. That's part of the history now.
Oh, no. I will never live up to that. In fact, I will live it down every day. Okay. So tell me about, before I get into this MASH game, which I'm very excited to do, relationships. You guys dated from a click. But what was your sort of experience? Were you with someone for a long time? Were you all over the place, like emotionally and sort of in terms of like liking this person, and then maybe that didn't work out? And then what was that like for you?
Yeah, I would say I was a very intense serial monogamist, where, you know, a lot of like overly dramatic 5 month relationships. We're like, oh, this is like everything. Oh, this is everything I've ever wanted. And oh, you're the love of my life. Yeah. And oh, I hate you and I'm never talking to you again. How dare you, Mario? That kind of thing. Like,
feels right.
Yeah. It was drama because, you know, it's, there was a, probably the most dramatic, awful thing was when I was a junior, this boy who I thought was like very, very cool and very cute and very popular and had a long time girlfriend broke up with his girlfriend to date me, and I didn't quite know he was going to do that or why or what, what was happening. Okay. But he was wonderful and I thought so cool, and he was like a singer in a band, and I was like, absolutely, we're doing this. And it was such a whirlwind that, you know, we had a friend of ours' older brother pierce our belly buttons together as a sign of commitment with a safety pin maybe 3 weeks into this relationship. And we broke up about a month later, and he got back together with his girlfriend, and they got married and have children. So I was like the little blip in there, like the come to the dark side.
His rumspringa.
Yeah.
A little brief rumspringa.
So there was
That's a lot of that.
A lot of very intense, wild whirlwinds.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Oh my gosh, hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture trivia podcast, Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play games like motivational speeches. It goes a little like this. Riley, give us an improvised motivational speech on why people should listen and subscribe to Troubled Waters.
I look around this ad and I see a lot of potential to listen to comedians such as Jackie Johnson and Josh Gondelman, and they need you to get out there and listen to them attempt to figure out sound rebus clues or determine if something is a Game of Thrones character or a city in Wales.
I have chills. I'm going to give you 15 points. All that and so much more on Troubled Waters. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you choose to listen to podcasts.
I got to get into this MASH game. I am very excited to hear. I got to go launch right into this. And we will talk about, I want you to talk about, there will be a point at which it is time for you to very much expound on the podcast that you're doing with Paul, which I have no doubt people probably, many people who listen to my podcast probably already know about. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to talk about it. So for your first MASH category, three films that you would love to be able to jump into whenever you want. You're not reenacting the plot. It's just the environment of the film that and the feelings that it gives you that you get to enjoy whenever you want.
Oh, yeah. Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, for sure. So, yes, I am the queen of camp. You know, the John Waters movie where he's in L.A. And everybody's just like high all the time and dancing and throwing the most fabulous parties and wearing costumes. And yes, doesn't wind up well for most people, but I love that movie.
Yeah. Yes, I totally get it. Beautiful. Okay, what's your next one?
Let's see. You know, I can't even explain this. It's more like a moment, but the thing that popped into my head immediately was the scene in Edward Scissorhands where all the yards have been carved into topiaries and he's out in the back making snow. And it just looks so beautiful. I would just like to stand in that scene with Edward Scissorhands making snow around me and the choral music by Danny Elfman.
Which let's not pretend that neighborhood isn't also very 1950s and pastel.
Oh, God. I really am.
I love it. I love it. No, that's like the perfect, I mean, you know, the sort of like pristine and beautiful with like the darkness underneath is something that many of us are like kind of love from a artistic point of view. Like those are two, those things together work really well together. Do you know what I mean? So there's a reason that that they are successful and that they like grab us, I think. What's number three? Please tell me it involves the 1950s with a dark under thread.
Oh, you know.
No, don't have to. You know, no pressure.
I'm going to go back two more decades. I'm going to go to the 1930s and I'm going to go to Footlight Parade, the Busby Berkeley movie.
Oh, great.
Where he just comes up with like the wildest things. And it's about a, it's about how movie theaters are trying to drum up business by having live acts before the movie starts. And
oh,
so it's
wow.
like
okay.
just dancers making incredible, crazy things.
Yeah.
And it's just these people choreographing these like routines with cats and waterfalls and mermaids.
Amazing.
And it is absolutely magical. And I saw that in a film class when I was in college. And it blew my brain. Like, to me, the 30s has always been the decade that I'm most kind of fixated on.
Oh, that's great. Okay. I love that. All right. Now, this next category, let's do three composers that you would love to have compose a soundtrack for your life. So it doesn't exist yet, but you're going to sort of, as you go about your day, you're going to have this kind of score underneath composed by one of these three people that you would love to have compose.
Oh, well, I mean, Danny Elfman, of course, first. I'll say that one right off the bat. We just saw him play at the bowl, and it was
yeah, I
amazing.
Had a lot of friends who went, and were like, oh, so good.
And then the next one, I'll say, have you seen the movie RRR? That giant epic that's just the greatest time you'll have at the movies all year?
Yeah. No, India? I haven't seen it yet. But I know, yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but it's absolutely on the list.
It is amazing. The soundtrack is so dramatic and thundering. My boyfriend teaches a boxing class to it. And it was like his number one on the Spotify this year. So I'll say like the composer of that is M.M. Okay. Keeravani. It's just great. Everything you want.
Okay, wonderful.
And you know, for the third one, I think I kind of want to do actually the soundtrack of Pulp Fiction, if that is allowed.
Yes, because, absolutely.
Okay, good. Because that shaped me so much. And I love just like the eclectic mix of old and young and quirky and romantic and all of the emotional tones in that. That's
yes.
a perfect soundtrack for capturing every mood. So I have to put that on.
Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, three foods that in this reality are perhaps you can't eat too much because it makes you feel sick for some reason, or you're allergic, or you feel it's ecologically irresponsible, or it was something you had one time in a faraway place and you've never been able to like recapture the perfect flavor of it. Three foods that in this reality, we're going to wipe all of that away. You can have it at the snap of your finger whenever you want.
Okay. I'm allergic to bell peppers, but muhammara, that like red walnut dip, is my favorite thing on the planet. And I will eat it every month anyways and just suffer.
Uh-huh.
Two, I would say a really good steak, charred rare, because I eat meat once a month now and I
yeah.
feel a lot of guilt on it. And the guilt around it maybe makes it taste a little bit better. But yeah, that steak, I get a monthly
that.
Steak. And so my
yep.
monthly steak keeps me from eating 10 other burgers during the month.
I appreciate that.
And then my second thing, I will pick something a little bit weird, which is, the first time I went to Moscow was like 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And in Moscow, they have a bunch of restaurants from Georgia, the country Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgian cuisine is amazing. And they don't have a lot of it here in LA.
Yeah.
They kind of tuck it sometimes into different Russian restaurants.
Sure.
But I had this dish there called tzatziki.
Oh,
and
yeah, okay.
it is cold chicken and walnut sauce.
Mmm.
Absolutely marvelous. And I've never tasted anything exactly like that.
Oh my gosh, I might have to track that down. Okay, great. All right, it's MASH. There's always some romance in factored in there. Three people, they can be characters from books, films, actors from different eras, anybody. This doesn't have to be a long-term thing. This is romance or sexy times in this alternate universe. Three.
So I can have them just as a fling?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay. And it has to be a specific character or an actor?
Oh, it could be actor. It could be any, yeah, it can be any form of that person, whether it's fiction or fact, fiction or fact, whether it's a factual person or a fictional person. I'm having a stroke.
Okay, great. Thank you. all right. Well, then the first has to be Clark Gable as Rhett Butler.
Great.
I mean, that impish look, that wink.
Yep. Great, great, great.
The second has to be Idris Elba, but I'm going to go with Idris Elba when he was dressed up. I believe it was for a GQ magazine, and he was dressed like Marlon Brando. So he was like Idris Elba, Marlon Brando, which is just the best combination.
Wonderful.
On the planet. And then for the third one, as a running bit on Unspooled, we once learned that Jimmy Stewart was like the most sexually attractive person in like if you met him.
Yeah.
And that he had supposedly a massive, you know.
Okay.
So I'll go with Jimmy Stewart.
Step aside, Milton Berle. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Okay. This is very good to know about Jimmy Stewart. I got to get into some Unspooled episode stat. And then final question, three places in the world where you would love to have a vacation home. And it doesn't even have to be like quiet vacation. It could be busy street, you know, in the middle of a city vacation. But three places you'd like to have a vacation home, and we're going to be able to teleport you there. You don't have to like sit on a plane.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Number one is Kyiv. My Great. Best friend and I went there, and it's the greatest city on the planet, and I cannot wait to go back when it is safe. It's wonderful. It's so imaginative. The second is Buenos Aires. I love that town. And the third would be New Orleans, my favorite town in America.
Great, 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 great. For good reason. Okay. Give me a word that kind of helps describe what you are proud of about Unspooled. Just like one word that helps describe what you're proud of about the podcast Unspooled that you do with Paul Scheer.
Eclecticism.
God damn you. I got to make this into a number. And I'm very impressed that you picked that. Okay, I got it. All right, I'm going to come up with your 100% guaranteed MASH alternate future, and I would love for you to take this moment to do a little mild vamping to unpack a little bit more about Unspooled and tell people where to find you, where to find it, anything else you'd like people to know about.
Yeah, totally. Unspooled is a podcast I do with Paul Scheer. You know him from a gazillion things. He's also the host of How Did This Get Made? How Did This Get Made is his podcast about terrible movies. And we do a podcast that's about wonderful movies. Unspooled started with going through the AFI Top 100. And when we got through all of that, we were like, you know, we've learned a lot, but we could cross 60 of these films off the list. Goodbye to most of the World War II films, most of the cowboy pictures. And now we are rebuilding a 100 list that we think is, you know, more representative of everything that cinema has to offer, and not just a bunch of dudes who are all friends who kept voting each other to the top of the list.
Right.
And so we have been using the last couple of years just to explore everywhere that our curiosity takes us. You know, it might be a Ringu or Goldfinger or, you know, Halloween, to think about a couple few like recent episodes. The Dark Knight, Starship Troopers, Night of the Hunter, one of the absolute best black and white movies. White Heat, Jimmy Cagney going nuts, but Paddington 2. We just recently did Michelle Yeoh's film Super Cop, which is
nice.
Just nothing but fun.
Yes.
So fun. And I love it. Every week we are just running around and exploring different corners of the film universe. And it makes me really happy. We get very much into the research and history of things like... So I'll just take a breath for a second.
Sure.
Like, we recently taped an episode of Die Hard, and in the research for that, I wound up getting way into the research of the actor who plays Takagi, finding out that he was a pop star in Japan in the 60s, and pulling out one of his songs, and they're wonderful. So it's kind of a wormhole podcast where we take movies and then use it to talk about everything that we think is interesting.
Oh, my God. So good. I feel like I never listen to my friends' podcasts because I always want to talk back to them. So it's harder because I know both of you, and yet it's irresistible. And I 100% know that we're going to be listening to Unspooled on many a road trip because Brandon's also a huge film nerd. So it feels inevitable. This has been so much fun. I'm very excited to tell you about the outcome of your MASH future. There's a lot going on. I want to first congratulate you on your beautiful mansion in Buenos Aires. So
Woo!
Not bad there. Going to go ahead and just teleport you over there. Whether you are there or anywhere else, you can have a beautiful, beautiful steak charred rare don't have to feel guilty about it. Whatever happens in this universe, no one's getting hurt. It's nothing's bad for anybody or anything. So enjoy that scrumptious meal. You can jump in whenever you want. And listen, you're going to need that protein because you're going to be very busy. When you jump into Footlight Parade, there's a lot going on. It's going to take a lot of energy. There's a lot of dancing, a lot of stuff that you are going to be kept very busy doing. So I think it's wonderful that you have access to this food and any other food. You also have a very different kind of vibe, a soundtrack to your non-Busby Berkeley life that is scored by M.M. Keeravani. So enjoy. Everything in your life is going to feel important because you have this like every moment.
It
like
will.
I'm brushing my teeth.
Yeah. Bima, Rama, Bima will be happening in my head.
Exactly. And all of this is happening with who I now know to be Mr. Sex Appeal and Mr. Amply Endowed, Jimmy Stewart.
That makes me so happy.
Yep. This is a beautiful picture that I'm seeing right here of this MASH life. So I want to, again, congratulate you on that and congratulate you on your fine work, your perspectives, your humor. Cannot wait to listen to Unspooled. And y'all, I'm serious. Everyone knows, like, the people I love most are the people whose podcasts I don't listen to because I love them so much. So this is a big deal. It's a big deal. I'm not making this about me. I make this about how brilliant you both are. It's got to happen. Like, it's going to happen. So you may be getting like emails from me that are like, just one quick thought, but I don't want to be that person because that's exactly why I don't listen. Okay. Anyway, it's happening and I can't wait. And I can't wait to discover new movies and discover crazy, wonderful facts about films I already know I love. So everybody, please do the same. Let's report back and talk about our love of Unspooled. And Amy, can people find? Did you say where people could find you online? I was maybe doing the math on and I missed it. But if you did,
oh great. Yeah. The best way to find me online right now is just Instagram at the Amy Nicholson. I have not logged into Twitter in a few weeks, and I don't know when I can drag myself to do it again.
Understood. Listen to that gut and feel free to stay away forever. thanks, everybody. Thank you, Amy, and I will talk to you all next time on the podcast. The show is reported by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the Baby Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers? Bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines to go and get us back.